Welcome to Hype, episode 121. My name is Selena. I'm here with Pam again for another week of exciting TV and movie and book news, music news. This is very cool. Hi, Pam, first of all.
Hi. This time we actually have, like, movie news and stuff. Last week it was TV. It was TV hype.
I was going to say we came back strong because this week there's been quite a lot of actually really big movie news breaking that we're going to get into talking about. We have hardly any TV at all, so we're balancing it out from last week. And we just came back actually from a pretty busy podcasting weekend. We also did a Gilmore Girls special yesterday with Merrima for season 6, so that is coming your way very shortly. I believe, well, we don't want to give an exact day, but it'll be out this week sometime.
Sometime this week, I promise. Mm-hmm. You can bug me on Twitter about it. It's fine.
Yes, yeah. So stay tuned for that. And we've only got one more season to go until the revival. We should be able to make it on time. So we're actually super proud of ourselves for that.
Yeah, self-gratuitous pat on the back, even though we should have done this ages ago.
The important thing is that we do it.
That's true.
Oh, well.
It's fine. We're going to add more hype to it. It's like exciting, right? You're excited about Gilmore Girls. You're excited to see if we make our deadline. We're excited to see if we make our deadline.
Yeah, we're just adding some drama to it.
Yeah, exactly. We're adding drama to the situation.
Yes. But anyway, this week we actually have some pretty big, completely non-related to Gilmore Girls things to talk about within Fantastic Beasts and Wonder Woman, Beauty and the Beast, all that kind of stuff that we will get to. As always, we just want to start by giving you our contact information. If you want to get in touch with us about anything you want us to talk about, any comments you have on the stories, etc., you can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can tweet us at hypeablehype. You can find us on hypeable.com, which is hypable.com. You can find us on Instagram at hypeablehype, and you can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. So please use any of those ways to get in contact with us and share your feedback on the show. So moving into the How We Hype segment, we're going to tell you what we've been doing in fandom this week, but we actually want to start by giving you a book recommendation. Geneva Lee's All Fall Down is the final book in the GILT series, and it's out now. We have an excerpt up on hypeable.com along with a book trailer. The author, Geneva Lee, has been compared to Pretty Little Liars, with a Romeo and Juliet twist in her series and in the final book. The murderer is finally revealed and we learn the fate of the young lovers. And, I will just give you the synopsis as well, which reads, the stunning final book in the Guilt series, in Bel-Mare, sin and secrets go hand in hand, but what happens in Vegas doesn't stay there, no twisted secret will be safe. Everyone here has something to hide and a lot more to lose, including their lives. Emma and Jameson have each other. Or do they? As Emma rushes to discover the truth about her past, she has to face the possibility that she will lose him forever. But with each new revelation, she finds herself closer to learning who killed Nathaniel West. She is not sure who to trust, her frenemies, her lying parents, or the online stalker that knows more than he's sharing. When the dealer plays his card, will they all fall down? So, very exciting. We have an excerpt from chapter 1 on hypeable.com, which is hypeable.com, so you can go and check that out, and you can buy the book now. Very exciting. Now, moving along in our How We Hype, me and Pam have the same this week, and it is dun dun dun. Okay, it's Doctor Strange. It's not, maybe not that exciting.
I think it's pretty exciting.
You think it's pretty exciting?
I think that our listeners are excited about it. So it is exciting.
Okay, so, right, exactly. So me and Pam both went to see it. I went to see it with my brother, who had no idea that Benedict Cumberbatch was even in the movie. And he also did not like him in the movie and ended up siding with Mads Mikkelsen, which was kind of hilarious.
Your brother is like literal Barney Stinson.
You would be so happy to hear that.
He's like, who do you refer to? The Karate Kid? The other guy.
Oh my god, that is so true. I'm gonna that's gonna make his life. He loves Barney Stinson to a weird degree. But anyway, yeah, so I'm very curious. We'll both give our mini reviews, I guess. So tell me what you thought of it.
Well, I you know what, I enjoyed it. I feel like that's going to surprise you, maybe. I went into it not really knowing very much. We've talked about before about the fact that Doctor Strange is not one of these well-known Marvel characters. I didn't know very much about the comics, aside from what we've been reading. Of course, on Hypeable, we have a lot of people that are really into comics over there that are much more well-versed to talk about this stuff than we are. But it was concerning to me when I was reading all of this stuff about whitewashing, because that's a really, really big problem. It was also concerning to me to hear that this comic in general has been steeped in so much controversy over the years. And so I kind of went into it having been tainted by that, but not really knowing too much about the story. I think that as a story, it was really amusing. I felt like the pacing was good as a movie. I really liked the visuals. We actually went to see it in IMAX Digital, which was really cool because they did a lot of stuff with the sound at one point, which really helped immerse you into kind of the storytelling. So from a technical standpoint, like, I really enjoyed the visuals and I liked the, like, the sound quality, and I thought the pacing was good. I thought the acting was good. But, you know, aside from that, you can't ignore that there is a lot of controversy surrounding this, and we should be talking about that too. So it's very conflicting for me to say that I enjoyed it, because there was all of this other stuff that should not be ignored just because the movie was fun to watch, you know?
Yeah, agreed. I think I will say on the controversy, it's very interesting. Obviously, we've talked a lot about it on previous podcasts, and we all obviously agree that the whitewashing was not a thing that should have happened. Having seen the movie, you can understand what they were trying to do, because I think when you have this movie, this is like undeniably a boys' club, this movie. You know, you've got basically just men. Even Rachel McAdams' character was good, but she had nothing to do with the, like, she was literally just an insert to add a love interest to the story. By taking this Ancient One and making that character a female, like, what they were obviously trying to do was to add some women into this film. That's not a bad thing. The problem is that I think the notion that you can replace a person of color with a white woman is just so fundamentally flawed. Like, it's not, you know, women aren't going to go, yeah, a white woman. Like, that's not a good thing, you know? Like, we've, you know, obviously, like, white feminism is not feminism, but, like, we all know and we should be aware of. And I think where they went wrong was not realizing, like, I feel like Marvel is very aware of the criticism it's been getting, and it's trying to respond to it, but it's trying to respond to it from a white male perspective.
And that's a problem that is happening behind the scenes. So maybe, like, I don't know what the demographics are at Marvel, but maybe it just comes down to getting more POCs in the writing room, getting more women in
exactly.
the writing room.
Exactly. Directors
stuff.
And writers, yeah, and Kevin Feige. I mean, Kevin Feige obviously is what he is, but he needs to listen to people, you know?
Like, I was reading this great article in Variety, and they had interviewed Asian actors that had been lucky enough to portray Asian comic characters. It was really interesting. And the first thing they said was, like, oh, we get it. We see what they're trying to do. It was really nice of them to try and include women. But what about an Asian woman?
Exactly. Like, exactly.
That is, like, not that Tilda Swinton is, she's amazing. There's no denying that. She's great in this. But it is kind of disheartening to think that like, and it's just, like you said, it's a matter of, like, turning that switch on and not, and just kind of thinking of the bigger picture over
there. Yeah, yeah. Because it's like, if they wanted a woman, get an Asian woman. And I understand when they're saying, oh, well, we wanted to avoid the stereotypes. You can do that with an Asian actor. Like, that's about the,
like,
writing.
You can do that with an Asian writer. Somebody somebody that's, like, Asian on your staff can tell you if you're going to, like, Fu Manchu with it or something. That's
exactly.
And that's the whole thing. It's like, if they're not comfortable with that, then that speaks more volumes to the diversity in the company, that they don't feel like they can bring somebody on to advise on whether they're going too far or not. Although I will say that it was really nice that they didn't, the character of Wong was
I liked him.
Yeah.
I thought
they,
it was good.
They were, in the comics, the article that I was reading touched on that too. In the comics, he's just like a manservant butler, and they gave him more to do than that.
Exactly.
This.
So that and that's was good. Like, what I feel like is a bit like of a shame is that, that obviously it's not like, oh, you know, let's clap our hands that they did this one thing right, but I do feel like they did this one thing right, and I can understand where they were coming from with the woman. It just, you know, having an Asian woman would have made all the difference in the world, and I don't think they understand why, and that's a problem. But I mean, and that said, and this is like a weird point, but I actually thought that Tilda Swinton delivered one of the better performances in the movie, and I know that doesn't count towards this, but I do think it's worth mentioning that she was very good. Like,
and
she's a good actress.
It's like, because it's too bad that they missed the mark on this one thing, because like they also, like, for all intents and purposes, it was a fairly diverse cast, like aside from Benedict Wong,
right? And there were just no women in it, and that's why I'm sort of coming from like they were trying to add more women, but oh
also,
my god!
Also, like Chiwetel Ejiofor was amazing as Mordo. I really liked him, and it was nice to see. Like it is nice to see when Marvel kind of sticks it to the man kind of and does these things like either like racially bends or gender bends and stuff like that. But the problem is like they can't just go like halfway with it. It would just be nice to see them like broaden it like we've been saying.
Yeah.
But like I said, like it's like it's fine if you enjoy it. Like I said, like I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was really funny. I thought that Benedict Cumberbatch was great, although he did kind of just play Sherlock in like Stephen Strange's body, like which is fine. But you should also just be aware that when you're consuming things like this, you like just like challenge yourself to ask the bigger questions and kind of think more critically, because you can enjoy something and still demand kind of more from the entertainment world. And I think that that's healthy.
Yeah, good point. Mm-hmm. Good point. I mean, as for the general movie, I didn't love it. Like, I thought, you know, all the controversy aside, I just thought it was kind of a subpar movie experience. Like, Benedict Cumberbatch was very good in the role. I was actually very impressed by his performance, but I did not think he was funny, and I did not think the movie was funny. And I think, like, there came a point when there had been that running gag about Wong not finding him funny, and then towards the end, like, there's a moment when, you know, something happens, and it's supposed to be funny, and it's just not funny. And I was just like, at that point, I was like, were we supposed to have been laughing? Like, there were a couple of, the cloak was my favorite bit of the movie. I really enjoyed everything to do with the cloak. But in general, for me, it felt like a completely by the numbers, forgettable origin story. Like, it hit every beat of like, he goes to this place and he learns some skills and we don't really see how and we don't really know why he's so good at them. Suddenly he's just amazing, and then he like becomes the best one, and then everything with the mentor happens. And then he like faces this foe and we don't really know what he wants. And then he it was extremely generic to a point that I really did not appreciate that. I thought it was okay, but I just... And the story was nothing to me.
I think first movies are hard though, because especially
not
with
really
Doctor Strange.
Like, I guess so.
I don't know. At the same time, you are very mediocre about Marvel in general. So
I am,
you're
but I
on
think
brand. Not that I disagree with you, but I could see why. I don't know.
For sure, it has been getting. I mean, some people have been reviewing it very positively and stuff. I don't see what was good about it. Like, I look at this movie, and I was looking at it through the movie, I was pretty much just thinking about like all the other movies that could have benefited from this technology. Like, I was thinking, oh, if they'd had this when they were doing Harry Potter, like how amazing would that have been, and how imaginative could they have made the magic?
Could you imagine
it was
the
so
moving
by the numbers.
Staircases the way that they
I know.
Did? Yeah, that's pretty
I
cool.
I know, yeah. But it just, yeah, I mean, when you stripped it down, like the story was very, very straightforward, and the character development was practically non-existent, except for, of course, Doctor Strange. And I think some of the secondary characters took some leaps that didn't make a whole lot of sense. And yeah, I did enjoy the first bonus scene or after credit scene. I thought that was worth sticking around for.
Yeah. Did you stick around for the second one too, like the after?
I did, and I thought it was that was stupid.
Yeah,
because like I knew it was happening. Yeah, but it was just that again. Speak of character leaps, just not making any sense. You know.
Well, yeah. With that, I think that one's more in line with the way that the story plays out in the comics. But you're right. It is kind of like they should have touched on it a tiny bit more in the actual film. You guys will see. Write in and let us know what you thought, though, because we're always curious to hear what you guys think.
Exactly. And I will say, like, I'm not regretting that I went to see it, but I'm happy that I didn't spend any money on it. Let's put it that way. And now I'm very excited for Thor and for Guardians of the Galaxy, which I think are the two next ones and some of my favorite properties. So should be good. Good times ahead. So moving into the news.
Oh my god.
I don't even know how to set this up or prepare you
just
guys.
Rip it off,
I mean,
like
you
a
all
Band-Aid.
Know.
Just do it.
Fantastic Beasts has cast Johnny Depp in the role of Grindelwald for the sequel. No.
I woke up the next day after this and I was like, is this a joke? Like, it's so, I almost
what
didn't believe
it. What the hell is happening here?
There's there's a lot of things that are happening here that we need to.
Well, let me set it up first. Let's try to process this together. And that's also if you can pull up, because I forgot to include it, but we have a poll. We asked our listeners what they thought of this news, and I just want to make sure that we bring that up so you can see that it's not just us. So basically, it was reported on the 1st of November, not the 1st of April, unfortunately, that Johnny Depp had been cast in the sequel for Fantastic Beasts. And Hypeable is actually the one who has a source involved with the film who says that he's playing Grindelwald. So that's not part of the official announcement, but it's coming from someone within the film. And pretty much the only alternative would be him playing Dumbledore. That's not going to happen because he's not British. And I, even now, I refuse to believe that they would not cast someone British for Dumbledore. So I think the Grindelwald thing is pretty sound, especially because he's set to become a major part of this movie. So I think there's a lot of different things at play here in the reaction to this. And I think it's worth going through, especially because I know some people are not really sure why there's such a strong pushback from fans. Like, there's been a really negative reaction to this. But let's start by getting actually the result to the quiz or the poll that we posed to our Hypeable listeners asking what they felt about this.
Okay, so we tweeted on November 2nd, how do we feel about Johnny Depp reportedly playing Grindelwald in Fantastic Beasts 2? 12%, yay! 88%, nope. Should we read some? We have a couple of tweets here. One is from @FoolingJulia, who said, "Can't say nope enough. Hashtag not my Grindelwald." Marie said, "If there was an option with a lot more cursing that meant no, I'd take that one. Unbelievable and disappointing on WB's part." And then Daryl said, "Excited to hear you guys discuss this." Well, Daryl, you're going to get your wish.
Because I'm about to flipendo some tables over here. Don't worry about it. I mean, okay, so first of all, just setting this up again, I mean, there are two major things at play here. First of all is obviously what we cannot ignore discussing or bringing up, I guess, is that Johnny Depp over the past year has been involved with some very damning allegations of, what's it called, domestic abuse of his wife or ex-wife now, Amber Heard. And they ended up settling in court, which means that he has been accused of these charges, but he has not been proven.
Okay, so he's been tried, but he's not been found guilty. Is that what you're trying
exactly.
to say?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's what I'm trying to say.
But
so
that is a very, like, that's a mindset we have in the United States because it's in the Constitution.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. But I'm just going to say that, like, either way, the fact that he's been involved with this is a very negative, you know, situation, and the accounts that have come out of this, it's been a very public trial that has left some feelings. And obviously, like, the law is the law, and that's fine. But I think people are also sort of entitled to come away with this feeling very uneasy about the situation for that reason. And it's not something that we necessarily need to discuss, but I think it's a very valid, I mean, it's not, we shouldn't not mention it basically because it's a thing that happened.
Right. And I think that in general, Hollywood, like out of all of the things that you can do to tarnish your reputation, domestic abuse, it has a long sordid history in Hollywood, being like kind of swept under the rug in Hollywood. Like people forget that, you know, like what, so whether, and, you know, so it's important to mention that it's happening. It's also important to make sure that we let you guys know, remind you that
it's alleged.
It's alleged still. So we're not saying he's like a wife beater,
no,
but it is something that is, you know, it's happening. And so
it's relevant to the story.
It is interesting because this is a children's movie that the WB is, and J.K. Rowling are putting so much stock in Johnny as an actor, and that's not to say he's a bad actor, but you do kind of wonder, well, where are they going with this? Because if somebody is still steeped in this much controversy, like why would you put him in a children's film?
Exactly. And I think so that's a part of it, but I think also a big part of it that I think is more relevant maybe to the discussion at hand is, do we want accusation, even accusations aside, the fact that such a huge star, like Hollywood A-lister with a such a big brand behind him, is joining the Harry Potter saga in such an iconic role, is bothers me personally. First of all, because I was already uneasy about Colin Farrell joining the series, because I think there's a difference. Like, even though the people in the Harry Potter movies, a lot of them are big stars, they are stars. It's a different kind of star, you know. Someone like Johnny Depp has never been in a Harry Potter movie before, and I think it's very hard to separate his name or who he is from the thing. Like, it's a Johnny Depp movie when Johnny Depp is in a movie, basically. And I think for me, I was very much looking forward to seeing Grindelwald on screen, because Grindelwald has never really been, I mean, he was kind of a little bit, but he's never really been a part of the Harry Potter story before, and this would give us a chance to really get to know him. Now that we know Johnny Depp is playing him, I don't feel like we're going to get to know Grindelwald. I feel like we're going to get another Johnny Depp character. And whether he's going to try to do something crazy character work like Black Mass, or he's going to pull off some Willy Wonka crap, like, I don't even really care. I'm super disappointed. I did not want a Johnny Depp in my Harry Potter adjacent movies, and I just am now super worried about who they're going to get for young Dumbledore, you know?
Yeah, it's so conflicting, because my best friend is, like, the biggest, and I, like, capital T, capital B, biggest Johnny Depp fan on the planet. I'm not even joking. Like, she could, there was a time when she was much younger that she could tell you, like, what year it was based on Johnny Depp's hairstyle. Like, it's like she, because she wanted to be an actress for so long, she looked up to him from a very young age. Like, not, it wasn't like nothing sexual. It was just like, he is wonderful. And this was before he went into these crazy, strange Willy Wonka type characters that are all kind of similar, but also different. Anyway, and even she's kind of like, I don't know if I want him in, like, I'm, you know, like, there's a part of my heart that will still love him, but I don't know if I want him in my Harry Potter movie, because it's something that she equally loves. And I kind of tend to agree with her. I think that there was a time when I would have loved to have seen Johnny Depp in Harry Potter. Like, my younger self would have loved to have seen him cast as, like, a Sirius Black. This was, again, before he went a little too crazy, wacky method. But as Grindelwald, I think this is a very strange choice. And I do,
I would have been much happier if he was playing an original character.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. No, I tend to agree with that. But also, like, I also think this is interesting because I need more of an explanation. Like, I need a statement from Joe, basically, because for so long she was like, no, American actors playing European wizards, you know, like, she was like, and then all of a sudden she's like, JK, because we've got Johnny Depp and he's going to play Grindelwald. Like,
I know. Where's it coming from? And that's another thing that is strange to me, is having such a, because Johnny Depp, it's basically, you know, there's a tier of actors in Hollywood that are the biggest, and Johnny Depp is one of them. You know, Brad Pitt or George Clooney would be other ones that you would never expect them to be in a Harry Potter film or a Harry Potter adjacent film. And I think that's what it's so confusing, because how this Harry Potter is this thing of its own. The universe exists as a thing of its own. And I think casting such a big A-lister, first of all, it makes me worried about what kind of franchise this is even going to be. And second of all, it just his name on the poster is going to take me out of the magic. And maybe that's unfair. I don't care. It's my opinion.
Yeah, that's your opinion. I hope that, because, you know, like, obviously he's a big name. I don't know how much sway he has on set, but I hope that they utilize him in a way that's best for the film, not in a way that, like, makes Johnny Depp look best.
Is best for Johnny Depp.
Mm-hmm. Because he has, it does need to be said that he has done a lot of wonderful work as an actor, like Finding Neverland, where he was J.M. Barry. That was great. The Libertine was a little strange, but he was really good in that. I enjoyed
Black Chocolat Rose. Was fantastic.
Yeah, Chocolat was great. Blow was really good. Like, he's, Sleepy Hollow is another one of my favorites, although it kind of gets to that, like, pale-faced, like, wacky-type characters that he tends to play. But Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas and The Rum Diaries, like, those are, like, two of my other favorites. So I really just kind of, like, I just kind of hope that they kind of rein him in, because it would just be so easy to, like, characterize Grindelwald.
But you know, and yeah, exactly. And you know what's super worrying about me, and obviously we won't know, like, a part of us are just, we're obviously aware that is a speculation that we won't actually know until we see the film. But a part of me, I remember David Yates, the director, once said when he was talking about Fantastic Beasts that he was very inspired by Prisoner of Azkaban, the movie. And that worried me already, because I'm not a fan of Prisoner of Azkaban. I think that the movie feels like a Tim Burton movie, ironically enough. Like, it's very extreme, and it's very tilted. It's very sort of odd. And so when I hear that Johnny Depp has been cast as Grindelwald, I'm thinking, okay, well, now I understand what he means by a Prisoner of Azkaban type movie, because even though Johnny Depp is a great actor, even maybe he used to be better than he is now, but he still has the capability for greatness. But in a big franchise thing like Harry Potter that has the tendency to dive a little bit into wacky fantasy, that's not where he is necessarily going to do his best character work. That's where he's going to do his best Willy Wonka or Jack Sparrow or, you know, and so the fact that he's now cast has opened the possibility that this is going to be that type of movie. And I will be so disappointed if that's the case.
The other thing
but we won't know.
That's worrying is, like, also, like, this is not Gellert, this is not like Grindelwald in Where to Find Him. You know, this is new story.
Yeah, that's another good point. Yeah.
Like, and you're right. Like, you do have to question, like, well, who's bigger than Johnny Depp? Because Eddie Redmayne has an Academy Award, but even he's not bigger than Johnny Depp. Mm-hmm. And so I do understand, like, the worry of, like, having that name overshadow everything else. And you could argue maybe that that's not bad, but at the same time, it's like, well, the brand of Harry Potter doesn't need a big name. So I am very intrigued.
So why are they casting him? Why do they need someone like
him? And then
you
have to wonder, like, who's going to play Dumbledore?
I know. Oh my god. It's going to be Benedict Cumberbatch. I'm calling it now.
You know who I want to play Dumbledore? I was thinking about this the other day. Is Jeremy Irons. I really think that.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. I think that he would make a good Dumbledore. I was thinking about this. I was like, he's a little younger. He looks very, like, refined, but.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, when I was putting my list, because in the wake of this news, I was like, oh my god, this is horrible. Like, I cannot believe this is happening. So I made a list of people that I did not want to play Dumbledore. And they were, like, huge names, like Benedict Cumberbatch and Tom Hiddleston. I don't know if he was on the list, but definitely, like, just really big, sort of overused actors that I feel like have no place. Leonardo DiCaprio, people that had no place in this franchise, basically. But I did say that, I mean, if they're going to go big, I think they could do a lot worse than someone like James McAvoy, for example.
Yeah.
Matt Smith was a, like, Matt Smith, obviously, he's the Doctor Who and the Crown. Like, if they got him for Dumbledore, I would be ecstatic. Like, not that I wouldn't, I want an unknown, but I also wanted an unknown for Grindelwald. So, at this point, I think the game is kind of out. I don't think they can cast Johnny Depp as Grindelwald and not get someone equally big. It's going to be like, you know, X-Men, they had Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen.
I mean, I guess you should also make the argument that they literally cast, like, very small actors for Harry, Ron, and Hermione and then filled the adult cast with very well-known people in Harry Potter. But this is a whole different beast.
It's different.
It's a whole other beast. No pun intended.
Yeah. I the funniest thing that I saw, someone commented on the news. It was some other outlets. And then someone, they wrote, Johnny Depp joins Fantastic Beasts. And then someone wrote, oh, great. Which beast is he playing? I thought that was hilarious. Like, could you imagine?
Great. He's just like a dragon or something. He's a little bow truckle in the tree.
But anyway, so that's Depgate out
actually,
of the way.
Actually, Johnny as a goblin, like, that would have been fun.
That would have been a lot of fun.
Okay, anyway, like, we've got more Fantastic Beasts news, you guys. Just, like, some quick stuff. Interestingly, we also got, it was also revealed that Fantastic Beasts 2 is actually not going to be set in New York, which probably makes sense if you're thinking about, like, the timeline of Newt going from all of this stuff happening to, you know, the start or maybe the end of the first great wizarding war. So this was actually revealed in Empire magazine, and basically Fantastic Beasts 2 is going to be set in Paris, France, which is very interesting. They talked a little, well, David Yates talked a little bit too about, like, the production and stuff like that and how they're going to go about doing it. And he even agrees it's a very lofty situation, but if anybody can do it, it's kind of Stuart Craig. And it also kind of ties into this idea of, you know, kind of meeting wizards from different walks of life, from different cultures and things like that. So it does allow Joe to expand the world a bit. But it also kind of gives us this idea that clearly this is a journey that's going to tiptoe itself across Europe. And I guess that makes sense if you're battling a wizard that's trying to recruit all over the place and, you know, make his message known. So what do you think about this as a setting?
I think it's interesting. I mean, I guess Fantastic Beasts is going to be the world tour of the Wizarding World, which I guess kind of makes sense. And I think Paris is going to be an interesting location. It also makes me think a little bit more about how much forward they're going to jump in time. I don't know if that has been revealed yet, because if we are going to go into Grindelwald's reign, like, this was Fantastic Beasts takes place in 1926. And obviously his rise to power sort of really kicks off in the 30s, so it'll be really interesting because obviously, you know, you'll be right on the fringes of where all of that stuff is going on. I do wonder though how it's gonna work with Newt. Like, is he gonna have a new case of beasts for each movie? Like, how are they gonna keep the beasts theme going?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I was thinking about this too, because you don't want to deter from the fact that it is his story, unless she's completely decided to just completely erase that, which I don't think is going to happen. I almost kind of wonder if we're going to find it kind of one of those things where he's the reluctant hero and he's like, no, I don't want to be involved in that. I just want to catch my beasts and be done with it. And then by movie three, he realizes, like, you know, this is much bigger than me. I need to, in my head, he commands an army of beasts, and that's what takes Grindelwald down. I don't know. That's all I can think of at this point. But I think it is going to be interesting to see how Joe juggles that, because it is, like, one of the biggest concerns of the fan base. It's like, well, you said we were going to get Fantastic Beasts, but now you're introducing Grindelwald, and, like, you know, where does the balance come in?
Yeah, I know. It's going to be very interesting. And I am genuinely interested, and that needs to be said. Like, the Johnny Depp thing has really thrown me off in a bad way, because I was, like, before this news, I was, like, genuinely getting very excited about this franchise and its possibilities. And as long as it doesn't devolve into a Johnny Depp story featuring Newt Scamander, I'll probably be fine with it. But I'm very curious about all of this stuff. I'm very excited. I got my tickets to the premiere on the 17th, and very excited to gonna go see it.
Well, you're not the only one that's excited, because our other tiny bit of Fantastic Beast news before we move on is just a short little report we have over on Hypeable.com. Critics have been seeing the film in advance of the theatrical release to get prepared for their reviews. Most of these reviews are actually embargoed until the 15th, but that hasn't stopped people who have seen the film from, you know, heading onto Twitter and kind of giving fans their initial reactions. And overall, they're actually really good. So if you were kind of a little hesitant and you kind of put a lot of stock in reviews, it should just kind of, you know, rest easy knowing that people are generally really enjoying it. And if you want to read these, there's like a bunch of them. You can head over to Hypeable.com, and the article is called First Fantastic Beast Reactions Arrive from Critics, and they're good. So there you go.
Good. Exciting. Yeah. So moving on now to something that I think is like universally very exciting, and actually, unlike the Fantastic Beasts news, which has made me less excited, this one has made me way more excited. Earlier this week, a new trailer for Wonder Woman came out, and full disclosure, I was not very excited about this before I saw it, because the first two trailers have been good, but not great. And I think all of the negative stuff about DC has sort of influenced me a little bit into thinking, oh, this movie probably isn't going to be very good. Then I saw this trailer. Guys, I'm like a little bit afraid of being too enthusiastic about it, because I'm worried that DC will hear me and make the trailer people cut this movie. But it's a very good trailer. I loved it. Have you seen it, Pam?
I have. I loved it too. It was so good. And then I saw it. It played before my Doctor Strange, and it was amazing on the big screen. I'm so excited.
That's awesome. I just had Fantastic Beasts, so there you go.
Oh, I didn't get that. That's not fair.
I think what this trailer does, first of all, it reveals a little bit more about Wonder Woman's backstory than the previous trailers have done. It sets up the struggle that she is going to be dealing with, which is, you know, the First World War literally lands on, you know, the beach of her homeland, and she has to face going into the real world and following this franchise, Steve, into battle. And there's so much girl power. There's a fantastic like closing scene of Wonder Woman with another woman. They're talking about how you can fight in a dress, and the other woman is like, "Ooh, I do enjoy some fisticuffs," and I'm just like, yes. It's such a fist pump like trailer, and like I just think it captured it's a lot more colorful than anything we've seen from this movie so far, and it captured an excitement and a joy and a lightheartedness that DC hasn't really given us before. The other trailers have not captured this, so I'm a little bit worried that we're letting ourselves be like manipulated by this trailer, because it doesn't necessarily reflect the end product, but it's definitely a good sign, I think, for this movie.
Yeah, and we also...
it could still be very good.
We also get to see Wonder Woman kind of show some of the skills that she's known for. Like, we get a great shot of the bracelets of submission in action, dodging, you know, deflecting the bullets and things like that. So all of that's really exciting for fans of, you know, the comics and... But overall, I think that the general reaction to Wonder Woman's trailers and stuff seems to be really positive from the fan base. So like you, I'm just kind of hoping that it holds up when the full movie comes out, because DC is like very much hit or miss. So the it's like fingers crossed that they do it justice. And it's not just like the best bits that we're seeing in the trailers, but also like there's more.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And I will say, I mean, a couple of people have pointed out how, because the movie sort of does a lot to make her like really attractive, and she's like naked basically in the film, and all the stuff about her being in a dress, and there's a lot of focus on her still looking good. And I think we're seeing this, the good ship Destiel was bringing this up in the comments and saying how it would be wonderful to one day get a superhero movie where the female superhero did not have to prove her femininity, you know, which is something that we're seeing a lot. And I think one of the reasons why I was, for Captain Marvel, I was very much rooting for someone like, for like Katie Sackhoff from Battlestar Galactica, or someone like that, like someone who is a little bit more tough And obviously this Wonder Woman is very beautiful and very feminine and stuff. And that's not that that's a problem, but I am still waiting for the movie that doesn't feel the need to do that to its female hero, you know? But all that said, still very, very, very excited.
Yeah. Should we move on to the next story?
Yes.
All right. Sounds good.
Speaking of beauty.
Yeah. So we have some awesome Beauty and the Beast news, you guys. Most excitingly, probably, is we finally got an amazing look at Emma Watson in the iconic yellow ball gown. And it's just like, oh my gosh, everything about this movie is so lovely. We also get a great shot of the Beast, which I know you were excited about. I saw your tweet.
I think you misinterpreted my excitement for confusion. I'm very puzzled by the look of the Beast. Like, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I think he looks exactly like the Beast in X-Men, just brown instead of blue.
Yeah, a little bit. But he also just kind of looks like
with the goat
Beast
horns.
Of like the movie, like the animated movie.
I guess. I think he looks a little fake.
Well, I mean, he's kind of like a very mythical looking beast. So we'll have to wait to see him in action, I think. I think it'll all come together in the trailer, hopefully, because there is kind of like this cartoonish element to these. Like, they've kind of out of softly focused all of these images, so they look very fantastical and almost like painting-like and not necessarily real. So, so we got a great look at Belle and the Beast in the ballroom. So that was like the iconic shot. We also get a nice different look. We've gotten a few looks at Cogsworth and Lumiere and Mrs. Potts, but this is just kind of like a better look at kind of some of the ensemble cast, and they all look really great. There's so much detail in this, and I'm excited to see kind of like to just experience more of the detail as this movie heads onto the big screen with actual trailers and things like that. And yeah, if you want to head over to Hypeable, there's like so many. There's a great shot too of Belle and Maurice in their home, it looks like. And we get some good shots of Gaston, who looks great. It's just, I'm so excited for this movie. Are you excited for this movie?
Yes, I am. I think that like the more we see from it, like aside from the Beast, I think it looks fantastic. I was very impressed with Emma Watson, the yellow dress, and Gaston, and the look of the castle. I think the look of the animated objects looks a lot better than the early art that we saw from it. So that makes me very happy.
And we also got a little bit more information as to this new backstory they've given Belle for the movie. Emma Watson sat down with Entertainment Weekly, and she revealed that she's actually an inventor, just like her dad. So that's kind of cool. In the interview, she said, "I was like, well, there's never very much for information or detail at the beginning of the story as to why Belle didn't fit in other than she liked books. Also, what is she doing with her time? So we created a backstory for her, which was that she invented a kind of washing machine so that instead of doing laundry, she could sit and use that time to read instead. So yeah, we made Belle an inventor." I think that that's really clever. And it also,
I think that's hilarious.
It also kind of falls in line with just the animated tale, because I think in like it's been a while since I've seen Beauty and the Beast, like the animated Disney version, but I feel like doesn't Maurice invent kind of like a dishwashing machine at the beginning, and then he goes off to
I feel like the that's inventing right
fair yeah mm-hmm. So that's kind of cool. It is really fun, and I think that it's very progressive, kind of, to just, it's not like Belle's like lazy and sits and reads all day. She's like actually proactive. You know, so I think it'll be fun to see if like her inventing skills like bleed into her time in the castle. Like if she just starts tinkering with things and stuff like that.
Yeah, I like this change a lot. And I think there's been, I mean, obviously it is kind of hilarious that they try to empower her and then they make her invent a washing machine of all things. But I do like, I do like the idea, and I like giving her more, because it's a very good question. I think it was Emma Watson who said it. It was like, what does she actually do with her time? You know, and I think that's a very good answer to that question. So I like the change. I think it's really neat.
Yeah. And then we got a little tiny tidbit from Sir Ian McKellen, who of course is playing Cogsworth. He basically recounted this great story where he said he really wanted like his own song in the movie, and so he just kept like singing things that he thought would fit, and then they didn't give him his own song, but he does get to be in the ensemble, so he does get to partake and be our guest, which is exciting because you know Cogsworth is kind of like the naysayer.
Believe. I cannot believe that Ian McKellen asked for a song and they said no. Like, how can you say no to anything that Ian McKellen asked you?
He said, when we were in the studio, I kept singing what I thought should be a rather good addition to the score. And then he thanked EW. My name is Cogsworth and I'm a clock tick-tock. And then he goes on to say, but I'm afraid I didn't get my own song, so I just joined in the big number be our guest. I think perhaps I have a couple of lines on my own. I'm not quite sure how it will all work out.
My God.
That's kind of amazing, though. He's just like, I want to join in on the fun. Everybody else gets to sing.
That's so awesome.
Well, Beauty and the Beast is not the only live action movie in development at Disney. I mean, like, this is something we already know. But what did break this week was that Disney is currently in, they're working on developing a live action Snow White. So that's kind of interesting.
What?
I know. I mean, we have gotten some.
I wonder if Johnny Depp is going to be in this.
He's going to be the witch. The Hollywood Reporter was first to learn of this, and it's going to actually involve a Girl on the Train film writer Erin Cressida Wilson and Mary Poppins Returns producer Mark Platt. According to the report, the new live-action Snow White will include new songs, so that's kind of exciting, and they're actually working with La La Land songwriters Benj Pasek and Justin Paul to do this. So we've gotten kind of some live action Snow Whites before, like we got Snow White and the Huntsman, things like that, but I think this is probably going to be a little bit more in line with the original Disney animated film that kind of started it all. So I don't know, I think like generally on this show, after we all saw The Jungle Book, we've been singing a different tune about these adaptations. So
I know, right? Yeah. Like Jungle Book was just so good, and now we're like,
bring
them all
on, bring them on. Let's do it.
I will say though, I've never been a fan, really been a fan of Snow White. So I'm like a little bit more ambivalent on it, and I'm also very curious how they're gonna do the dwarves, because I think already when they did Snow White and the Huntsman, there was some pushback saying, can we stop being so stereotypical in the way that we portray, like, on like that. So I think once they do this, they're really gonna have to rethink that approach, I think.
I think so too. And like you, I don't have too much of an attachment for Snow White, but when I was younger, there was a comedy show on Spanish television called, it was like, I think it was under the Chespirito brand, and they had a live action Snow White called Blancanieves y los Siete Enanos, and then they had like this weird name that I can't remember, and it was amazing, and maybe I'll tweet out a link to it that no one will understand unless you speak Spanish, but it's really, really funny. And I think they must have been working with the Disney company or something, because there are a couple of like mini like little Disney scores throughout, or like scores that Disney has used in other movies to kind of tie it all together, but it's like great, and that's like my only attachment to live action Snow White, so I'm interested to see where Disney goes with this for sure, because they have been putting their own spins on their animated tales, and I think that that's the only way that these new versions can really kind of survive and make a name for themselves. So
yeah. Okay, so a little bit of a different story now, and this is basically just because I wanted an excuse to remind you people that it's happening, because, oh my god, The Dark Tower, the Stephen King adaptation, is finally happening, but it has been delayed, which is kind of hilarious, because it's been in the works for 20 years. So what's a couple of more months, right? So the movie stars Idris Elba as the gunslinger and has Matthew McConaughey in the role of the Man in Black. It's being directed by the Danish director, Nicolai Assel. I don't know why he didn't ask me to help, but whatever. Maybe next time. So the movie was scheduled to come out in February. Now it's been postponed till the summer, mainly to spend more time on post-production, but also so Sony can have a bit more time to amp up the promotional campaign, which is probably a good thing, because like a trailer was scheduled for December, but other than that, there's been pretty much no news about this. It's been a bunch of pictures and that's it. And for such a potentially big production that is hopefully the start of a new series, they really want to give that more time, and they don't actually have a lot this summer coming up, so it's a good staple summer film for them. So all in all, it's good news. I'm disappointed we have to wait longer for it, but at least we're gonna get it at all, and at this point that matters more.
Well, It's funny that you mentioned getting it all, because that kind of feeds into the next story, unless you want to. Did you want to say anything more about the Dark Tower?
No, we're fine.
Speaking of movies that we're going to be getting at all, so I guess we should be happy about this. But actually, I'm kind of excited about this news. Rami Malek, who everybody knows and loves from Mr. Robot these days, is actually the new star of the upcoming Queen biopic, Bohemian Rhapsody. So he's going to be playing Freddie Mercury in this, and it's kind of like bittersweet to see him involved in this, because this movie has gone through a lot of changes. At one point, both Sacha Baron Cohen and our fan favorite over here on Hype Podcast, Ben Whishaw, had been attached to play Freddie Mercury. But it looks like Rami has landed the role himself. This movie has been in production for about 8 years now, but it looks like they're finally getting somewhere as far as like moving from pre-production to actual production. They also have a scriptwriter and a director attached now, which is very exciting. So they're actually going to be working with Anthony McCarten, who wrote The Theory of Everything, and Bryan Singer, who of course we all know from X-Men. So they're going to be teaming up to kind of bring this all to life. And original band members Brian May and Roger Taylor are set to produce the music for the film. So it's definitely going to kind of have involvement from some of the original Queen members, which is very nice. And filming is allegedly supposed to begin early next year. So hopefully it actually gets up off the ground this time. And I'm very excited to see what Rami Malek does with this. I think he's just a great actor. So
I will say I'm very happy that he has replaced Sacha Baron Cohen. And it's not that I don't like Sacha Baron Cohen. And I actually, the resemblance between him and Freddie Mercury is actually pretty amazing. But I think that, and this is, I guess, sort of on the same line as Johnny Depp, I'm very prejudiced when it comes to these actors. But I'm just like, at this point, Sacha Baron Cohen is a very specific type of artist. And him stepping into the role of Freddie Mercury, who was also a very, very, very iconic artist, would have felt a little bit offbeat to me. And I appreciate that it's going to be Rami Malek, who, first of all, is really talented, but also is a bit of a more low-profile star.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because I was actually sad to hear that Sacha Baron Cohen had exited the project. I think that a lot of people don't realize that, like, despite the fact that he is very goofy, he is like very much a method actor.
He's very good. Yeah. Like, he is a very good actor. I just, you know, it's just, again, the name.
Yeah. I think that, like, the thing about Sacha Baron Cohen is that it just makes people pause to wonder. Mm-hmm. But then you think of the fact that, like, he's done things like Sweeney Todd, and you're like, oh, but he's a singer too, you know? So, so I would have liked to have seen what he would have done with this. I know, like, my brother is, like, personally devastated, but Rami Malek is amazing, and I think that everybody is just excited to see him do more. So it's going to be exciting to see him spread his wings in something like this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so moving on now to a movie that is in trouble, and surprise, we're back to DC. The Flash movie starring Ezra Miller. There's also a Fantastic Beasts link in. Oh my God. Like, Hollywood has no actors, you guys. It's crazy. Anyway, the Flash movie starring Ezra Miller is likely going to be postponed after it loses its second director. Rick Famuyiwa has departed the project after citing creative differences. And he is the second director to cite those creative differences, because screenwriter of the project, Seth Graham Smith, actually exited the project back in June. And I mean, this is DC, and it's not surprising that these directors are clashing with the studios. And it happens at Marvel too. You know, it famously happened with Ant-Man, and arguably, I would say we got a worse movie that we could have done, but that's, I guess, up for debate. It's just such a shame, because Ezra Miller is fantastic, and the Flash movie is set to be a really good movie for DC. It has the potential to be a lot lighter and a lot more fun than some of their other movies. And just to see that the directors are dropping out of this project like flies, I think really speaks to big problems within DC in general. And it's just a shame to see this happen, I think.
Yeah, I think that it's very similar to what we were talking about with, in a way, with Deadpool. And it's just, it is too bad that they, that something goes on behind the scenes that we're not privy to, that they just basically file under irreconcilable differences. Right. That all of these amazing people get, you know, they exit these projects and they all end up turning out okay, but it's just, yeah, it's just too bad. And I hope that it does, like, The Flash is one of the movies that I am probably, like, most excited for on the DC front that isn't, like, actually, you know, filming right now. So I am hoping that this doesn't mean that we don't get it at some point.
Mm. And I mean, and I will just say from a former US state, he directed Dope, by the way, and his statement included, he said, "I pitched a version of the film in line with my voice, humor, and heart. While it's disappointing that we couldn't come together creatively on the project, I remain grateful for the opportunity."
Yeah.
And I'm just so sad because I wanted his voice and humor and heart.
Have you seen Dope? Dope is amazing.
Yeah. It's so good. And, he is such a good director.
Yeah. You know? And I just, it's just, you know, and that's what upsets me so much, that you see, like, these big, like, you know, like Marvel and DC, like, they do the right thing. They're going to get these amazing off-the-beaten-path directors, and then they just let them go. And it's just, like, what did you expect when you hired these people? Like, of course, like, people like Ava DuVernay, like, she's not going to, like, sit down and let you tell her what to do. She's going to make you an amazing movie, like, you know? And it's the same thing with this. So it's just disheartening at the end of the day. But...
yeah, for sure.
Okay, so we actually, I might be the only person on hype right now excited about this, but Fuller House is coming, season two is coming in December, and we finally have a trailer for the second season. It just looks like more of the same cute, fun, wholesome family stuff. We get a nice little look at where the Tanner Fullers and the Gibblers are going to be as the season opens up. It looks like DJ has taken too long to decide between her two beaus, and now they've all got their like new girlfriends, and she's kind of like left out in the cold, which, you know, serves her right because she should have just made a decision already. Spoilers, the decision should always be Steve. Come on, let's be real. Also, there's some romance looming in the air for Stephanie, who might be hooking up with Kimmy's brother. So that's kind of a little plot twist, I know. And then on the original cast front, Danny is going through a little bit of a midlife crisis. So I think that's going to be fun to play with. But overall, it just looks like a fun, nice, warm-hearted little second season for Fuller House, and I'm excited to tune in when the episodes start premiering on Netflix on December 9th.
Awesome. I'm happy. I'm happy for you. I have no interest in it, but very nice. I'm glad that the trailer looks good. So on the TV front, we also have some news from the Cormoran Strike TV series from Robert Galbraith, aka J.K. Rowling. The TV series, relevant to our interests, Pam, has added Holiday Granger in a starring role. Holiday Granger, of course, who we all know from Merlin, that one episode that she guest starred in. And yeah, just another great stuff, too.
Bring it all back to Merlin, as always.
I mean, it always comes back to Merlin. It wouldn't be hype
if it didn't come back to Merlin.
Exactly. So, but yeah, she's actually going to be playing the main female character, Robin Ellicott. We saw her last in the BBC's Lady Chatterley's Lover as a Lady Constance Chatterley, and she was also in, what was that movie? The one, was it the Liars Club?
I think so. That sounds familiar.
Was that what the name of it? Something like that. It was a movie that was took place at like Oxford or Cambridge, and it had like Douglas Booth was in it. Wait, I'm gonna look it up. It was directed by a Danish director, which is actually why I even watched it in the first place. So I'm going into Doug's booth now. Let's see. The Riot Club, not the Liars Club. That was close.
No, the Liars Club sounds like a movie, but the Riot Club, yeah, I do. The Riot Club. That's Sam Claflin.
It's directed by Lona Shafi, and Holiday Granger was in that, and she was very, very good in it. So see, I don't only know her from Merlin. But no, she'll be starring in Cormoran Strike, and Tom Burke is playing the titular character. We found out recently that the series will be coming to America on HBO, and it will be airing on BBC One in Britain. And production starts in 2017. So very exciting times. Very good. She's very good. I'm very happy to see her in this.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited too, but I'm more excited for our final story. I'm not even going to lie to you because...
I know, you're just waiting to get to that.
This is actually going to be my Howie hype, but then we decided that we needed to talk about Doctor Strange. And also, it works well as a news story. You guys, the Hamilton mixtape is actually happening and it's coming sooner than we all could have hoped for. This news kind of started tumbling out about this towards the end of this past week. And we got an official artist lineup, and it looks amazing. There's a bunch of stuff from The Roots on here, which, of course, we kind of already knew about since they were very involved in kind of, like, the mixing and producing of this album. Basically, it's, like, every fan's dream lineup, I feel like, especially if you're a fan of, like, Lin. It's, like, it's just so amazing to see that he was basically able to work with everybody that he admires and that inspired him. Like, it's amazing that all of these people were interested and willing to kind of, like, you know, put the time to get into the studio and make this happen. So we've got guest appearances here by Busta Rhymes, Nate Roos from Fun, of course, Nas is on this, Usher is here, Watsky is huge, I know Maram is a huge fan of his, Sia is on here, Regina Spektor, Lin has a couple of demos on here, which will be very exciting for fans of the musical to experience, Alicia Keys, Jimmy Fallon is, I'm so excited for this. Jimmy Fallon and The Roots are doing You'll Be Back, which of course was, you know, Jonathan.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. And my personal favorite, because Lin has single-handedly managed to give us Mesmerize 2.0 from the early O's, Helpless, featuring Ja Rule and Ashanti. This
is like, oh my God.
This is so funny to me. Some of the people I'm most excited for are Andra Day's rendition of Burn and Chance the Rapper and Francis and the Lights, a Dear Theodosia reprise, which is right at the end there. And I'm also kind of excited to see what Common and Ingrid Michaelson do with Who Tells Your Story. So those are kind of like the three I'm super, super excited for. But overall, I think this is going to be a really, really fun kind of addition to the Hamilton fandom and everything that we've gotten since this wonderful musical has, you know, seen the light of day. The album actually was available for pre-order at midnight in everybody's respective time zones on New Music Friday. And if you pre-ordered the album, you also got two tracks off of the mixtape, and they're so, so good. They released My Shot, which features Busta Rhymes, Joel Oritz, and Nate Roos. And what I liked about this was that it just kind of gives you a feel for, like, I think what the artists are going to do with these, which is kind of put their own spin on the idea of these songs, because it's not Busta Rhymes and all these people doing a cover of My Shot. It's like Busta Rhymes and all these people injecting themselves into the spirit of this song. And I think that that makes it so much more personal, and it's so lovely. I really, really liked this one. And then if you want to have a good cry, you should listen to Kelly Clarkson's rendition of It's Quiet Uptown, because this really, like, it hit me in all the feels, and it's so good. You can actually, you can purchase these songs, and you can also stream them on Spotify if you're a little short on cash right now. So that's a fun, free way to take a listen and see if this is something you're going to be interested in purchasing. And we have all of these links embedded up on hypeable.com in our rundowns of what you can expect from this, and we'll be getting the full album on December 2nd, so it's coming up, the release for this, and I'll be
just in time for Christmas.
Yeah, I know, it's like, it's actually running into my, I always start listening to holiday music on Black Friday, so it's gonna run into that time, but I will forego some Christmas music fun for the Hamilton mixtape.
I love this. I love this kind of stuff. Like, because I know at this point, obviously, people like Hamilton fans and everyone else has listened to this album to death and, like, still really loves the songs, but have probably heard them, like, a gazillion times. So this is, like, a brand new way of I'm going to make a terrible comparison here. But when I was a little bit younger, I was a huge fan of Kate Vogel, and I discovered her through One Tree Hill. And then I just became a huge fan of her, and I got, like, all her albums. She had, like, three albums, but I got them all, and I was, like, listening to them over and over and over again, and I listened to them to death. And then I found out that of one of her albums, she had released an acoustic version of the same album, so all the same songs, but acoustic different versions of all the songs. And so it was, like, all of the songs that I loved, that I listened to death, suddenly I could go and I could listen to them all again, and they were different enough but still the songs I loved. And I know that's like a really dumb comparison, but I feel like it's the same thing, because it's like, it's all the songs we know, but new artists and new ways of experiencing them. And I just think that's so fantastic. And I love this, and I'm definitely going to get this.
And I think that's very, I think it's an apt comparison, because especially when you start diving into acoustic versions of your favorite songs, sometimes it allows mm-hmm. you to experience parts of the song that you didn't even realize would like resonate with you more, because it puts more of an emphasis on vocals and on lyrics. And I think that that's why people love Hamilton so much, because there's so much going on in all of these tracks. But what brings you coming back for more as you like listen to the like just the original Broadway recording again and again and again is that all of a sudden all of these bits and pieces and this like lyric work start popping out that you didn't realize were almost there to begin with. Or maybe you did realize, but they didn't hit you at that time. And I think it's going to be the same with the Hamilton mixtape, as you're going to be able to listen to these things again and again and just kind of find new ways to not only fall in love with the source material, but also fall in love with the stories that these artists are trying to convey as they capture the spirit of Hamilton. And that's all I'm going to say about that, because I could go on for like ever. It's not even, not even joking.
100%. Well, absolutely fantastic. We're very excited about that. And we will obviously come back to it when the full soundtrack is released. Pam is going to talk about it for an hour. Get excited.
Yeah, it's going to be the Hamilton mixtape special starring
special, me. Oh my gosh, yes. So moving on now to TV show of the week. I don't know if you have anything. I do have something. And last week I promised that I would watch the first episode of Class, BBC's Class, and I have done it. I've watched it, you guys. Oh my God. There was no reason for me not to have watched it until now, except that I was super busy and trying to watch, you know, Gilmore Girls and Buffy and The Crown and all these shows. This show is my new favorite show. I am hooked already. Like, if I had had more time, I would have watched all of the episodes that have, I think 4 episodes have aired so far. I only saw the pilot. This show is, like, when people are calling it the new Buffy, they are not wrong. This cast of characters, they're all a group of, obviously, it's a Doctor Who spinoff. The Doctor actually appears in the first episode, but it is definitely not about him. It's about a group of kids at the school, and they have to fight monsters. They describe themselves as being on a hellmouth, which I thought was amazing and hilarious. And instantly these people are likable. Every single one of them, like all of the main characters. The main character is actually gay, and he is a prince, and I'm not going to say any more because I don't want to spoil anything. He is really awesome, and he has this really great friendship with the main female character, who's the one in the overalls, and some stuff happens with her, and there's some supporting characters too. It gets very gritty and very bloody at some point that I was very taken aback by. Like, it maintains that Doctor Who level of fun mixed with genuine scariness, and it almost reminds me of, like, I don't want to say the first season of the reboot Doctor Who, but maybe like the second season, you know, when David Tennant came in and his chemistry with Billy Piper just kind of sent the show in a new direction. And it was just instantly gripping. And I think Patrick Ness, obviously, we had high hopes for his take on this show, and I think he just delivered 100%. I was very, very positively surprise. And I realized too, it's been a long time since I've watched like a good British show, you know, where they kind of, you forget sometimes, like you just need a good non-stylized British show in your life every once in a while. And I feel like this one delivers. It's like the more house-trained version of Misfits, if you will.
That makes me more excited to check it out. I actually haven't had time, but...
Oh, but me neither. which is why I've only seen the pilot. But it's worth... I think you will be very positively surprised. And I think by the pilot, you will be very sure if you want to make this a priority viewing or if you don't, you know? Because it starts off really setting the tone very clearly for what kind of show it's going to be. And I'm really into it. And I actually think like a slightly toned down version of Misfits is probably the best way to describe it.
I'm into it. You've mm-hmm. just kind of played to all of my favorite things. So
yeah, it's so good, guys. It's amazing. Next week I will probably have watched, like, I'll have been caught up and I'll be able to give a more thorough review. But I just wanted to let you guys know that it's definitely, if you're able to watch it, I know it's not out in America yet, but it comes out in 2017. Like, you guys have to wait a ridiculously long time.
Oh, well, then I feel a little bit better about not having seen it.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, it's just me who, like, should really be caught up by now. But I'm glad that I started watching it. And we will probably have more coverage of that in the future, too.
I actually don't have anything. I'm still watching The Walking Dead. It was not as crazy of an episode as the first episode, but I feel like they did that on purpose because you kind of needed to, you know, kind of just cleanse your soul. We did get to meet King Ezekiel, though, and his tiger, so that's kind of exciting, and we did get to see where Carol is at the beginning of this season, so it's just kind of one of those things where I'll be tuning in this week, and maybe I'll report back next week.
Okay.
But yeah.
Yeah, great. So moving on to listener feedback now, we have a couple of emails to start us off. I'll take the first one from Mark, who says, "Hi, a while ago I recommended the Dutch series Adam Eva. Apparently there's going to be an American remake set in New York." He links us to a Dutch article. And says, "I can't help but wonder why American TV executives refuse to just air the original with subtitles. Previous remakes of Dutch shows were never of the same quality as the original. It's such pity." Several Danish shows, obviously most notably The Killing, were remade for American audiences. They even remake British shows in America, sometimes with a good effect, like The Office, I would say.
Yeah, and sometimes successful. With bad effects, like Skins.
Yes. But I think, you know, airing a show, like a foreign show with subtitles, immediately turns people off because it's just not part of the culture over there. Am I correct in that?
I think that it's not because Hollywood has decided that American mm-hmm. audience would be bored or would, God forbid, not be able to multitask. But I think that that's stupid. Mm. I think that like, obviously there is a huge, like, there is a small demand for foreign cinema. Or maybe I just live in really cultured places. But I mean,
yeah, you're from San Francisco.
I know. I was going to say we have like the Italian Film Festival, the Latin Film Festival, the Irish Film Festival. There is a film festival for everything. And so, yeah, I mean, like, I grew up watching things with subtitles and stuff, but I'm also like multicultural in the sense that, like, you know, like, I also was raised by a very Mexican grandmother. So, like, we grew up kind of watching both. And yeah, I think it just varies from place to place.
Right. And to be honest, oh, go on.
I was just going to say that overall, it's probably just because they think that the needing to read, like, what is being said will deter from, like, the watching experience. Is that would just be my assumption.
And to be completely honest, I kind of feel the same way. I'm not a huge fan of watching things in a language that I don't understand because I feel less connected to what's going on. And I will say that I think in Denmark, we are very lucky because in some European countries, they actually dub foreign stuff. Like in Germany, for example, they just dub all of the movies. So you never get the right voices for anything. And they don't do that in Denmark. They actually just do subtitles. When you're watching 3D films in a cinema, this is very annoying because the subtitles like pop out over everything else and kind of ruin the entire experience. But that's another discussion. But I will say, I mean, it's not totally, like, it's not just America. It's also like, I will be a little bit more hesitant to watch a Polish film or a French film or something like that because I will have to read the movie as opposed to watch the movie. And I find it harder to absorb it that way.
Yeah, I mean, like, personally for me, I think I watch, because I am bilingual, I also speak Spanish, I tend to gravitate more towards like if I'm watching foreign film to something that's made like with like in French or in Italian, because it's mm-hmm. it's much mm-hmm. easier for me to pick up on it. I took 5 years of French, so I can get by.
Yeah, like I would watch Norwegian films or Swedish films.
Yeah, because I will say that like it does, like obviously you are going to miss some things on the screen if you have to like look down a little bit to make sure that you've got the right thing that you think you're getting. But it's not a bad way to consume like anything. I understand why people like are afraid, because it does, like sometimes you do have to watch it like a movie more than once because you know that you've missed something or things like that. So it is a shame, but you know, not everybody's comfortable. I think I could see something with subtitles making its way over to a smaller, maybe like a premium network. Not necessarily, I don't think you'll ever see it like on a Fox or like an NBC or a CBS or anything like that out here. They have more to lose, basically.
Exactly. So I hope that kind of answered. That was a very in-depth discussion.
I know. Well, we have another email here from Nuria, I think that's how you pronounce it. She or he, I don't know.
I think it's a girl too. It's a girl.
Says, hey guys, first time writing, long time listening. I just wanted to say I religiously listen to all your episodes and keep nodding in agreement with a lot of the stuff you bring up, which is very nice in a time when I keep switching pop culture coverage sites because I don't fully agree with some of their views. But Hypeable hasn't let me down so far. Wow, those are like some big shoes to keep filling.
I know.
She continues, I'm even watching Gilmore Girls for the first time in the middle of season 7 now. Hope to catch up before the revival. So your specials were a nice surprise when I thought I might be the only one watching this show in 2016. I can't wait to hear your opinions on Logan for season 6. Well, you're going to get them soon. Sometime this week. I was listening to one of the last episodes where you talked about Timeless and was surprised to find that you didn't bring up the suit currently filed against the creators. It has been huge news in Spain, where I'm from, but maybe it hasn't been covered extensively anywhere else. Besides expressing my undying love for your show, I thought it would be interesting to let you know that this is happening. I'm a huge fan of the Spanish show that is claiming Timeless ripped them off, and even if I haven't seen a single episode of the US show, the concept does sound familiar, which could be a coincidence, except both studios were in talks before Timeless was developed. Let me know what you think about this. And she also sent us a link to this TV Line article. So
it kind of goes along with the last email, funnily enough. That's interesting. Yeah. I honestly had not heard anything about this.
I hadn't either. I think that actually maybe TV Line might be the like on the cusp of this, maybe over here. Because I haven't seen it either. This is very interesting, though.
That's interesting, because I know, I mean, a couple of years ago, obviously, Red Band Society came over to America and was a remake of, a Spanish show. And Mark was just talking about a show from his country being developed in America. And it seems like what they're accusing Timeless of doing is basically doing the same thing, but without paying them any money for it. Which is interesting.
Yeah, I'm grazing through this article right now, and it does sound very similar. So the show in Spain is called El Ministerio del Tiempo, which translates to the Ministry of Time. And
it's a great name.
Yeah, I really like that name. But it does sound very similar. Maybe I'll watch. Wow. You know what? Maybe if I have time, I'll watch an episode of that and watch an episode of this. And
that
see
would be
what
a good
happens.
Follow up.
I won't have to read subtitles either. Yay, native languages!
Bringing it all back. Wow. Awesome. So thank you so much for that tweet, Nuria. And that was very interesting, or that email, sorry. That was very interesting. We're definitely going to be following this and seeing what comes of it. Moving on to tweets now, I'll take this one since, you know, we have a couple of comments basically in response to the special that we did with Tom Hopper and Owen Mackin that Pam did earlier this week. And Jennifer Sieben says, an amazing podcast as always. So great to hear from these two about the film. Volig Los Gelost says, this was so great to listen to. I really loved it. And Mariah Lovegood, because I tweeted out that secretly we had been a Merlin podcast this whole time, and she says, I hate to tell you the bad news, but I think everyone that listens know it's a Merlin podcast. I like it because I miss Talks of Camelot.
Aww,
and we do too.
That's why we try it, we try and inject it here and there, you know.
Pretty much. I mean, yeah, if any of your listeners don't know, me and Pam both used to be on a... I was just a guest star, but I pretended like I was a regular host.
You were my regular host.
We had a Merlin podcast way back in the day, and unfortunately, those episodes no longer exist online, Andrew.
Yeah.
But we were very into it, and I think it comes across very clearly, and we have had quite a few Merlin-related guests on the show at this point, and we hope to continue that streak.
We're going to catch them all, you guys. Just you wait.
Yeah.
Also, just wait for that Camelot procedural to come out. We'll have some thoughts.
Oh, I know. We're going to get all over that one. Yeah. So do you want to take the next one?
Sure. This one's from Martha Gutierrez, who says, watching The Crown on Netflix. Thanks, at Hypeable Hype, for the recommendation. The show is really good. Should we expect a hype special? Wink.
Sweat drop.
Oh, we're
so many specials.
We're not going to say no, but we will say not right now.
Well, yeah, at the moment, we are so focused on getting those Gilmore Girls specials out. And once Gilmore Girls premieres, we will have probably do a lot of coverage for that as well. That isn't to say we're not going to do other specials, but at the moment, we are kind of a little bit pressed for time. So things like The Crown and Black Mirror and just things like that might have to take a bit of a backseat. But the good thing about those kinds of shows is that they aren't so time sensitive, I feel like. So we can hopefully get back to them when it slows down a little bit for us in terms of all the Gilmore Girls stuff. So watch the space. We definitely would like to. We're all big fans.
Yes. Stephanie Merrill is playing to all of my favorite things with this tweet. She says, I fell behind on every show but Pitch on Fox, but it's okay because my Cubs are World Series champs. Still crying. I've missed 4 Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. plus like 9 episodes of DC/CW shows, but it was worth it. So many cry face emojis. Stephanie, I'm so happy for you. Baseball just... I love baseball so much. I feel you. Our drought was not over 100 years, but it was over 50 over here in San Francisco. I still remember what it felt like in 2010 when the Giants won the World Series. So I really hope you're enjoying it. I hope you're going out to the victory parade if you're close to where it's happening, and just like, go Cubs, go. Everybody, I'm so happy for your city. So that's great.
The Lady Ash says, I can't wait for The Crown, also totally restarting Gilmore Girls. I miss having these characters in my life already. So I guess she reached the end and then just started over.
That's kind of amazing. I like that.
Yeah, I like that too.
Kelpie says, great show, ladies. Love the British accent. I forgot about that.
I know.
And then she says, Selena, looking forward to The Crown. Claire Foy is amazing in everything.
Well, cheers, Kelby. Thanks for that. Yes, absolutely. We hope you like The Crown. And finally, Shelley has a bit of a game changer for us. So as we reported last week, Vine is shutting down, and she sent us a link to a BuzzFeed News article asking, how do you guys feel about their new app? And guys, the Vine co-founders have launched a new app, and that app is named Hype.
Oh, so nice of them to launch an app on our behalf.
I know. So we're very excited. I mean, they haven't reached out to us yet, but we're expecting their call any day. We're assuming this is for all of our listeners, yeah, you know, to better communicate with each other.
We're really hoping this is like a 50-50 deal, and they just wanted to surprise us, like an early Christmas present, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, they must be big fans.
Yeah,
so
they're gonna catapult us into the new generation of technology, and we'll just, yeah.
Exactly. We knew we were ahead of the game, but this is just so unexpected.
And clearly, they realized too, and they were like, we're just gonna, I wanna thank the Academy. Yeah.
I wanna thank my mother, your dog has been very instrumental.
I'd like to thank
my
dog. He is definitely an instrument for sure. And we'd like to thank you.
Yes. Yes, you, the listener, the honor is truly yours. Oh my God, this is so funny. And I'm like, don't really know how to feel about it. I guess hype is just a word that is used a lot, but it's still kind of funny.
Well, it feels like a brand to us because we've been under the hype banner for so long, and Hypeable has been in our lives for so long, but... Yeah, at the end of the day, it's just a word. So,
yeah,
how sad.
Exactly. Yeah, Andrew even has another podcast called Hype.
Yeah.
So it's not even like, yeah, it's basically a popular word, but we still take this as, you know, as an homage to us because why the hell not?
Right, exactly.
So thank you so much for all of those, that feedback. We expect we'll get a lot more through our new app next week, so we'll keep you posted on that. As for now, though, if you do want to contact us, you better use one of our usual ways, which is on Twitter at HypableHype, on Hypable itself, which is HYPABLE.com. You can email us, hype@hypable.com. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. So we cannot wait to hear from you. Make sure that you check out our Gilmore Girls Season 6 special if you are into that. That comes out later this week. You should also go back and look at some of the previous specials you've done. You can find them all on Hypable or on iTunes, or you can find the links on Twitter. Until next week, have a wonderful week, everybody. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
Ta-da!
Yay!
And your phone.
And my phone. And my phone was itself.